and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hey everyone, I'm Mark Marble.
And I'm Chad Bokelman.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 561.
Time for Green Lantern number 12.
That's right. Reunited and it
feels... I was tempted to do that too. Well, we have to give credit where credit's due. It's actually a good cover.
I do. Actually, I like a lot of the covers for this. We'll get into it later. But when this was solicited, I really do like it. It's... Montos has a lot of, or not Montos, Zermanico has a lot of great covers. Some of them, just maybe it's color or whatever, but this one is really well done. I like the action, the sun, I guess it's a sun behind them or something. And then the, you know, the light, the way the light plays, the flow of her hair and everything. It's just a really good cover.
Yeah, it is. It's I would say it's one of the better covers that we've seen recently. Certainly better than the... So certainly better than that last John Stewart cover we talked about, which again, it has merit on its own right, in its own right. But all right, so let's try to dive into this. I'm going to do the best I can, considering I've actually only read this thing one time all the way through. So let me do the title first before we get into any of the brouhaha here. So the actual story is Discovery, the usual suspects, I believe, Jeremy Adams, Zermanico, colorist, Romulo Fajardo Jr., Dave Sharp, letterer, variant cover artist, Doc Shaney, Gleb Melnikov, Karen Grant, assistant editor, Jillian Grant. What if there's a relation? Editor, Paul Kaminsky. The infamous Paul Kaminsky. All right, so this issue kind of begins in an interesting spot because it's something we saw happen last issue. But again, it's all those tricky people, these tricky comic book stories that we saw Kyle and Salik and with 2-6 being apprehended. But we just saw the beginning of the apprehension because during the process of them trying to be apprehended by these peon United Planet Lanterns, Kyle, who's still an emotional mess and pretty much and mostly impotent, by the way, here, but he freaks out and he tells them to stop, and he raises his ring hand and he wipes out, he lays them all out, wipes out all their green constructs and their uniforms and their rings, apparently. I could have done without the what the frag is going on. We have more than enough Lobo references in this book, thank you. But the fact that Kyle was able to do that is interesting, and everybody's kind of trying to figure out how he could do that. But they said, hey, we might as well, let's get it a dodge while we have a chance. We cut back to Hal, and they kind of make a comment about, well, hopefully Hal and everybody else is having better luck dealing with the council. Of course, we know that's not the case. We have this issue is very splash page heavy, I must say. I don't necessarily think that always works. I think there's probably too many, despite how nice they look. I think it's kind of lazy at times, my opinion. But we begin with, but we open up with a splash page where we see Hal and his crew taking on the United Planet Lanterns and the whatchamacallit, the ring. What are they called? The ring drainers, bearers?
I'm not sure. Yeah.
Hunters, the ring hunters.
Yeah.
Those jabronis. And the battle doesn't go very well. And it doesn't last very long before pretty much everybody is out of the battle except for Hal. Hal realizes, well, he's got to get out of Dodge too, because he needs to get help, and that's the only way he's going to be able to help everybody else. So he flies out of the council room, heads into space. That's where he runs into the Unseeing, the other jabronis we saw a couple of issues ago, who obviously are not all seeing, no pun intended, because of the fact that they sense Hal's ring is different, but they have no idea how he got it. So obviously they know some things, but but they're not either 100% telepathic, nor are they, do they have the ability to, they're not 100% clairvoyant either. Yeah, Hal tries to get away from them, excuse me. He gets attacked by more of the United Planet Lanterns. He's trapped and looks like he's done for. Then all of a sudden, violent energy lights up the area. The unseeing are completely confused by this, conveniently enough. Carol starts kicking their ass, which is kind of contradictory in one level because she admits it in a few panels later. She has no idea what she's doing or who she's fighting, so how it's working so well is a mystery. So Carol showing up is probably my favorite splash page in this issue. So Hal and is rescued by Carol. Carol, I guess, makes kind of a pseudo Star Sapphire tether. It's not entirely clear how she makes what exactly power she's tapping into to create her interdimensional vortex there. But she ends up transporting them back to Earth, back to Hal's trailer. And first Hal's kind of barely conscious. He thinks this is kind of like he's delusional. He thinks, hey, maybe I've been dreaming all this stuff. He's like, I had this crazy dream. One of those things. Now we cut back to Tharos. Tharos is reading the Riot Act to some of his peon United Planet Lanterns, and he basically turns them all red so they can fight to the death to see which one is worthy of basically staying in his service. Kind of like what the Joker did in Dark Knight. In the Dark Knight, we see a United Planets ring, which is not a bad design, considering, on Tharos' finger. And this obviously must be related to some whatever they're trying to do with the emotional spectrum. And he realizes that, you know, Hal Jordan's still alive, and he's wielding a ring that has a different power source. He kind of speculates, conveniently enough, that maybe the Guardians have another source, another power battery somewhere that they didn't know about. Then, because the United Planets by themselves aren't bad enough, and Amanda Waller by herself isn't bad enough, now you have to have a teaming up of the two, because Tharos reaches out to Amanda Waller and says, hey, basically, I have need of your services. I need you to take care of Hal Jordan. And she says, well, I thought you had this under control. It's like, well, we did, but now we don't. So you need to take care of it. And he makes it clear he's been looking some of the other way with some of the absolute power crap that she's engaged in, and kind of threatens her, cutting to the chase, to, you know, just do what I want, because I'm sending some of my own guys to do this, but I have no confidence that they're going to do it because they already failed. We cut back to Hal and Carol, and they're having a conversation, a kind of an interesting moment where Hal, you know, she's kind of confessing to Hal that at the end of the day, I don't really basically want stability or predictability. A seemingly hard way of saying, I want you, Hal. Hal's about to say, I love you. And then the trailer gets attacked. And then we see a bunch of, I guess, Amanda Waller goons along with, I know that's King Shark. Who's the guy on the right? Do you know?
No, but you know who he looks like?
Looks like Werewolf by Night, but we know it's not.
No, yeah, he also looks from Marvel as well, except a different color. He looks like a Wendigo.
Yeah, kind of, or you could almost say Sasquatch, except he's wearing pants. But that ends the main story, and the next issue is Absolute Power Begins. Woohoo!
All right, over in our backup, it must have been a little while, although it doesn't tell us this, but Guy is still stuck in this Bottle City, and he's driving a mail truck, a construct mail truck. His whole job is basically to deliver packages and stuff and to the various Cesarnians down here. He delivers a package to the Cesarnian that he was originally with, who he mistook for Lobo. He tells him he's got a way out of there. They try to sneak in. Guy is dressed up like a Cesarnian, which immediately doesn't work.
But it's funny as hell.
They go through a bunch of stuff to figure out how to get these implants out of their lower back that apparently Brainiac has finally figured out the one thing that he hasn't done for a long time, which is when people, you know, he was so high and mighty, you know, nobody ever escapes the Bottle Cities. But apparently after, I don't know how many years of storytelling that Brainiac has been around, people do all the time. So all of his occupants in his Bottle Cities have implants that if they detect that they leave the bottle, they are immediately transported back. So they're digging for these things to get these implants out of them. Meanwhile, while they're doing it, Guy finds an item called the Eye of Krona, and Then the Caesarian finds the thing. He immediately stabs guy in the back, literally, to get the implant out, and then himself. And just as they're about to leave, they are teleported somewhere, and they're falling to their quote-unquote doom. And that's it.
Definitely the best issue of the other best part of the Guy Gardner story so far. I found it amusing.
Yeah, it was fun for sure. You know, whether or not it was, you know, it'll amount to anything, I guess.
Oh, no.
This Eye of Chroma thing. As a fan of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and its subsequent films, you know, I don't know how much of this is Bill and Ted worthy, other than it's just zany and stupid for the sake of being zany and stupid. But, you know, maybe the Eye of Chroma thing will pay off if nothing else.
Well, yeah, that's about the only thing, since we have no idea what it is or what it's going to be able to do. That's the only thing that you would assume from this is going to have any real relevance. In fact, I didn't forget that it happened in the story, but it's easy when you're trying to describe what's going on, because in the context of this Lobo Brainiac crap, it doesn't mean anything. But it's going to, because, you know, now the guy knows that the United, you know, he, again, Guy, just like with Hal, why these people were, you can't give me a rational explanation unless somehow they were being subtly brainwashed for why they wouldn't automatically distrust the United Planets to begin with. But why everybody was, oh, but what do you mean they're not on the up and up? So, like, even Guy, as of this issue now, Guy knows that the United Planets basically is, but they look the other way with the Brainiac stuff on purpose and things like that. So I kind of like the variation on Guy's haircut in this book and this issue. It's subtle. And sometimes it's really weird. Just because it's so simple, it's just like literally with the straight lines going up and
yeah,
going
got
to the side.
Beard.
Yeah. But I like it. I think that works with the flat top. It's weird because again, do I really care about anything in the story? I mean, have we gotten through three parts? No, I don't care at all. But the reality is, this to me was the most enjoyable part. Not just because Guy's kind of like being a UPS driver, but it kind of means nothing. But it was amusing overall. Looking at both parts of this book, this was a step up, I think, from what we've gotten in the last couple of months. So I take that as a victory.
It was definitely fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Where do we want to start with the main story?
The Kyle stuff was somewhat interesting because obviously, I shouldn't say obviously. It's likely that Kyle, not necessarily intentionally, because he clearly didn't try to hurt or take out these guys on purpose, other than he was just trying to get them to stop, and he was emotional, and then the energy and the power came out, which makes sense because he tapped into the emotional spectrum. So his ties to the emotional spectrum clearly give us a way out of this, because when you're tapping into the truly tapping into the spectrum, even if it's just one person who is naturally gifted to do that, you certainly could take out these United Planet bozos seemingly pretty easy. So there has to be something to the resolution of this and what's going on and what Kyle was able to do, just like Tharos talking about not just having his United Planet's pseudo Green Lantern ring on, but talking about how, you know, how Hal could ruin his everything we've been building towards, how Jordan, you know, can ruin if we can't figure out how he's powering his ring and take away that power. We don't know, obviously, what Tharos is really doing or why, and other than being power hungry yet. But those are I mean, obviously, there's a whole lot. There's still tons of question marks. There's a lot of mystery here. I mean, we still don't know how exactly Carol got her ring. We don't know why. I mean, we can go with the emotional tether thing, why she was able to go to Hal, because she did say Hal at the end of last issue, the fact that she immediately thought of Hal. So that would make sense why she went there. We don't really know. We assume it was probably the Zamorans sending that to her as a failsafe, but I don't know. I think it moved pretty well. I think the pacing was good. I think probably because at the end of the day, we really weren't jumping between too much stuff. In the beginning, we got the prologue with Kyle and company, and then we didn't see them again. And then we had, mostly it was Hal with just like one, maybe one cut back to Tharros until the very end when we get Tharros and Amanda Waller, which, yeah, we could have done without. But I mean, personally, because we don't care. But I mean, from a storytelling perspective, I guess it was necessary.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to be dragged in this absolute power event, I mean, it, at least he's bothering to set it up before we actually get into it, so it doesn't feel like a completely left field jump, which I'm going to try my damnedest, guys. Like, I I'm only speaking for myself. I don't know about Mark, but it's not Jeremy Adams' decision to participate in this event or not. It's DC editorial. So I'm going to do my best when we actually get to the absolute power stuff, including what we see here in this issue. I'm going to do my best to not fault it for the story, for my interest in the story, my lack of interest rather in the story being told. That's what I'm going to try my best to do that. And just judge it based on the story itself being told, not necessarily the plot.
No, I get that, and I agree with that. I think that it's still possible we might enjoy, or at least get some enjoyment out of the single issue, even though we don't really care about the event. And even though, depending on how it's handled in the story, it's also possible it may not seem like a complete dragging us out of the main story just to force a tie-in. Because at least if we pick up where we left off and we have Carol and Hal dealing with this and dealing with King Shark and all these Amanda Waller lackeys.
Well, we do know Carol's obviously heavily involved based on what we've seen in Solicit. So we know Alan is... We know Alan is too, but Carol is also involved. So at least that tracks.
Yeah. So it could make the kind of like the forced inclusion, if you will. It could make it slightly less, either less problematic or more acceptable, depending how things go. So we'll have to see.
Have you seen the group shot image of all of the main Justice Leaguers in their new get-ups for this event, and rather lack of their get-ups, and how they're being interpreted as without their powers?
I think I have.
Because I sense a new action figure wave. Especially the Flash figure. Everybody seems to be excited about that one. At least who are paying attention and even slightly amped for this event.
Yeah,
it is even the correct word. But anyways, back to the story. First thing I will say, I like these alien designs for these three lanterns that Kyle takes out.
Yeah.
We have some sort of near godlike looking dude. He's got long flowing hair. He's jacked as hell. The only thing is he's got horns. We have some more sort of insectoid that reminds me of the Planet Hulk insectoids, if anybody remembers those. And then I really like this fish in a bubble thing, which is kind of cool. Why he would decide to mech himself out like that is an interesting choice. Like, I get it. It's fun artistically, but like, we have had non-bipedal lanterns before that are like, for instance, anybody remember Lantern Box? Box didn't like make himself a construct mech to walk around in. He just floated around and did his thing. So, but anyways, I still think the designs of these lanterns are cool. I like, obviously, we already have Salak and 2-6, but 2-6's unique design and Salak's design, you know, really help lend to the alienness here. Big flashy fight panels. It's actually hard to keep track of the action in these splash panels.
Yes.
But it's very well done in its chaos, which I guess is the intent, because, you know, it's a big fight. It's only these three. He's trying to protect Joe. He loses a track, and in the chaos of it all, he can only get himself out. He can't get Baz and Joe out, which is fine, because not only is the situation chaos, but obviously artistically we can see that rendered in front of us. We're like, I don't we can't even keep track of the action, let alone get in a situation where like, wow, man, how come Hal couldn't get them out of there? Like, we're very understanding of the chaos. So I don't really feel, I don't know, jilted or whatever in any way that Hal wasn't able to get them out. I can feel the chaos of the situation. So it doesn't make, I'm not looking on it like, oh, that doesn't make sense that Hal couldn't do this. So that's cool. We didn't really flesh out a theory, but our quote unquote theory about the unseeing not really being omniscient is very, it's starting to come true here.
Yeah, big time.
It's clear they're pretty powerful, but there's that. Carol showing up, cool. You mentioned the liking the splash page. I like the art of the splash page. I don't know if I like the angle of the splash page. I think like it makes it more powerful because she's like looking down on them and she's appeared above the fray of everything. So I artistically, storytelling wise, so on and so forth, there's nothing wrong with this splash page. It's conveying exactly what it was intended to. But as an art piece, if I were to get rid of the bubble and just say, hey, I want this as a print or something, if I were to just want to look at this image all the time, I wouldn't want to look at this angle.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. And also the color is, I mean, it's kind of muted even before she shows up on the splash page. But I think the color kind of the violet kind of being muted the way it is doesn't really work. Mostly it's because of the light arguably in the background behind her that's kind of like muting it more than because she obviously appears brighter in other panels. But I think that's another thing. I think I'd still like it as if I'm like maybe for the main reason you said that it's a powerful entry. Mm-hmm. But it just, for whatever reason, it just seems we do have a lot of splash pages in this book. And even when they're not 100% splash pages, it's like almost like an amalgam, like when Kyle takes out those lanterns. It's not really a splash page, but it's close.
Yeah, that's like, true.
So it struck me as odd because I don't remember us having that many splash pages, certainly to begin a book. And we have a bunch of them in this book. But.
Yeah,
the art is good though. The art is
yes, 100%. I think I really hesitate to even say I was right because it's not like I was like, you know, really harping this on as a theory or anything like that. But when I was trying to justify to myself what Carol's intent was, why she was acting the way she was in the previous issue, and you know, rushing to get married and some of the thoughts going through her head. As Dan has actually pointed out, you know, the only we rarely even get Hal's internal monologue in this series. So it's good to get a glimpse into not only Carol, but Tharos. We got Tharos's internal monologue for a page or two. So we get a sneak peek into his head and what he's thinking. He seems to think it's like, I know it's not shocking that the bad guys think they're right, but he seems to think he's protecting something and he's doing what needs to be done for the good of the universe or something. Like, what threat does he perceive that we don't? What does he know that we don't? Like, that's a question that we've had throughout this entire series in some fashion or another. But if he thinks he's right about something, then what does he know that we don't?
I have no idea. And again, some of this could very well just be ego and the arrogance of perceiving that, hey, you know better than everybody else. And there could be some quote unquote big threat that he's trying to prepare everything for. But I don't get a whole lot of noble intent at it, you know, vibes at off of him or the United Planet. So I don't know. I think there's too many variables left. Cause we, again, if they literally are going to give us some sort of quote unquote secret origin of Tharos, then there's going to be something that we probably could never figure out or never see coming from a mile away, especially as a Durlan that might.
Oh yeah, that's right. We have the secret origin issue coming soon.
Yeah. So, until we get that, I don't know. I'm not anticipating any kind of big surprising. Hey, you know, Tharos might be right. I would be stunned if we're going to think that or even entertain the idea, no matter I don't think it's going to be that altruistic.
Okay. Waller, don't care. I do like how Carol immediately, and I'm not saying it like as a sexist thing or as like, of course the woman does this, but I do love that she's getting him stuff out of the fridge. She's like, this place is disgusting.
Yeah. She should go to Guy's.
Yeah. Oh man. I think it's funny. I don't know how much I buy what she says, but it makes enough sense for me that I'm willing to go along with it. Yeah. I guess I don't, as a result, I don't hate her actions now that we get her in her monologue here as much as I did last issue. And even last issue, I didn't necessarily hate her actions. They were just, I don't know, suspect.
Yeah, I agree. I think at least for most of this issue, I think she's at least written a little more Carol-like than we got last issue, what you would expect Carol to be like. Maybe the end with, again, we don't entirely know where she was going, where that was going to end up entirely, what she was going to say to Hal. You kind of suspect, but you don't know, because that could be one of those curveballs. But in a book in which a lot of characters have not necessarily always acted the way you would think they would, or very logically, that Carol was probably not, she certainly was not one of the not one of those major glaring, not so much Danger Will Robinson, but not one of those glaring red flag moments of, hey, that doesn't seem right. You don't really get that, I think, as a whole in this issue. So I think that's another plus.
Yeah. Let's see. And then, yeah, I feel like I'm supposed to recognize this death squad behind King Shark.
Probably.
Just based on mask design and everything. But I don't know who, like, is it like Death Strokes or something? Like, because I'm getting the orange and the black and everything. But I don't know the masks. The mask actually reminds me of what's his name from the MCU.
Taskmaster?
No, the guy from Civil War, the beginning of Civil War.
Oh, Crossbones, right?
Yeah, Crossbones. That's him. Yeah, otherwise that's it. You know, despite everything, did this feel just like a super quick read to you? It felt like such a quick read to me.
I think I know what you're talking about, but to me, I think the only reason it felt that way, because actually the way the book was going, I almost forgot we were going to get a backup story, because it seemed like there were a lot of pages dedicated to the story. Okay. But to me, that doesn't contradict what you said, because it flows well. I think it flows better maybe than some of the last few issues with the jumping and some of the glaring questions and thing, or maybe illogical actions and things that have been going on. That this issue seemed to, I think it flowed better, and it seemed the pacing was better. So I think maybe that's why it seemed boom, 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 boom when you're reading it, because it just naturally just works. That would be my theory on it. But I definitely liked it compared to more than the last few issues.
You know, talking about how quick the pace was, I know your philosophy on this as of a recent conversation. I don't know if it's changed. Maybe I didn't know your philosophy about trade paperbacks, but I feel like this would read better in trade. Which, by the way, guys, I mention it last episode? I ordered the first volume trade paperback. It should be here in the next couple of days. So
I think you did. I thought you did. Anyway,
I'm looking forward to trying that out and seeing what it how it actually reads. I think the interesting pacing of this issue makes me think it might read more complete's the wrong word, because of course the story is going to be more complete in trade paperback, but
yeah, almost anything, you know, objectively, I mean, almost anything is going to read better in trade, because first of all, you don't have to stop, you just you plow through. I mean,
that's true. But I think that's it. I don't know what else to say about this. I think one thing I was going to mention, it's on that page where it says OA Resistance Core Base, and they're tying everybody up and everything. That second panel, is that just a computer desk with like HP monitors on it? That doesn't look very alien to me.
Enemy Zero. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that doesn't. But then again, let's be honest. considering Resistance headquarters basically consists of like five people, not counting Hal. It's like, what, you don't even need a lot of desk space no matter what. Do they show even any chairs in this?
No, they show sleeping mats, like regular, like they barely even look like sleeping bags. They just look like a blanket with a pillow section kind of sewn into it or something.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, anything else? Do you have anything else for this one?
No, this was good. And I think overall, when we look at, along with the John Stewart issue, and arguably maybe even dare to say the Alan Scott finale, that at least we've gotten some pretty decent issues over the last and this month's worth of books.
Yeah, and I will say, and I never thought I'd say it, but this little sneak peek into Tharos's head here actually kind of gets me, I don't think excited is the right word, but more curious than I was before about the secret origin of Tharos story that we're getting coming up soon.
At the very least, there's a chance that there could be some payoff where it may not justify the entire storyline or make us think that much better of it. We may think better of it to a certain extent, but we're not going to change our minds massively about it. But there's a chance. That's why it's critical for that. This book has never 100% lost either one of us, as opposed to the John Stewart book, which kind of has. And then they kind of trying to reel you back in a little bit with the last issue. That's the benefit. Yeah,
it's 100% lost you. I'm close.
Yeah, but you were. I think you're being really kind. I think you were there, and then I think the last issue maybe walked you back from the ledge a tad more. I mean, it walked me back a little bit too, but you were pretty, I mean, you were not enthused at all about doing the recap of the, and I don't even mean the one we just did, before it's a better issue. You had no desire to do that recap of the issue 8 or whatever. But either way, the point is, that book is much more, well, because of that Olgrin Thud reveal, it's kind of hard to pull yourself off the mat and continue and have people care. This book has never quite has ever gotten to that point where it's like, okay, we're out, or you almost want to flip the switch. It was getting me close. This book was getting close. This issue was very well needed, because I was really starting to no longer really care all that much about even this book. And this was my favorite of the three. So let's just see if we can get some momentum going forward.
All right. What else do we want to talk about tonight?
But yes, if you want to come back and do feedback, we can. So before we do that, let's do what has Mark seen? I saw Bad Boys last week. Ride or Die, I think, is this one. It was pretty good. It's clear at this point in that franchise, it has now become somewhere between, on the sliding scale between Lethal Weapon and Fast and Furious. Because now the family, quote unquote, has expanded so much that it's not just the two main characters anymore. It's not just Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. It's like a lot of the peripheral characters that have been introduced along the way, or every movie, like those other movies in the franchise, you keep adding in new characters one after the other. It was enjoyable. It was pretty. I thought it was pretty funny. It was fairly predictable as far as the big reveal, quote unquote. I think that was fairly predictable, but I enjoyed it, and that's it. And then this week will be the Watchers, and barring some act of God that prevents me from going to see that tomorrow.
I saw a trailer for something I had no idea was coming out, or at least no idea was coming out in the way I saw it. The Piece by Piece trailer. That's is it Feral? The Lego movie thing.
Oh, yes. I saw the
trailer.
That actually was on. Now that you mentioned that, you're right. I never heard of that either. That's a very, very odd. And I'll let you talk about it. It's very eclectic, to say the least. But that was on Bad Boys. That was, I think, the first trailer on Bad Boys, actually.
Yeah, I guess they started the marketing for it, because I got to, you know, I like to watch YouTube stuff on my TV. And every now and then you get really long and skippable ads. And they went hard on that movie. I saw that trailer, that ad pop up a few times, you know me in music documentaries, and then you add in Lego movie logistics, and it doesn't look like the direct to DVD Lego movies that you get sometimes from Marvel or DC. This looks like, you know, Lego Batman or the Lego movie or Lego movie 2 or Ninjago or like that quality. So I'm actually legitimately looking forward to this. If we had seen this trailer before we did this, our movies we're looking forward to, this would have been on my list.
Right, which, as we both know, it wouldn't have taken much to bump almost any movie off our list, considering it was tough finding five.
I also have been seeing a trailer for that Tom Hardy movie, that biker movie.
Yeah, it's just about to come out.
Yeah, I've been curious about that. But other than that, I think those are the piece. I think it's Piece by Piece or Piece by Pieces. I think that's the name of that Lego movie. And then whatever the name of the Tom Hardy thing is, those are the only movies that have caught my eye recently in terms of trailers.
The Bike Riders,
yeah.
Oh, speaking of movies, before we switch gears, you'll be happy to know, if you haven't noticed this, that Blade just lost its director, so now they got to get another director. That movie is so cursed.
Yeah.
I would be stunned. I will be, especially since there were so many rumors circling to begin with, that Ali's about to dump that movie to begin with. This could very easily be the final nail in that coffin, considering how long he's been waiting to do this movie and how long it's been delayed at one thing after another. And the strikes were only just one small piece of this delayed puzzle. So it would not surprise me if they end up needing a new star as well, because he can't stick around forever. Plus, he's like 50 now. So he's 50. As somebody pointed out, he's 50 playing a character that supposedly doesn't age. So, you know, I mean, that can work for a while, but again, it depends what your plans are. I just think he's probably going to be too frustrated and say, hey, you know, I tried. It's like, but moving on.
At least he's not the original star. Here, he was a nightmare.
Oh, Wesley Snipes?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. He apparently was not easy to work with. Certainly, we know in the third movie there, that's pretty, at least the rumors anyway, are pretty well documented that he was.
I mean, the rumors come from multiple sources.
Right. So, the odds are there's certainly truth in it. I'm just saying that by all accounts that he, yeah, certainly the third Trinity there, that was that he made everybody's life miserable. But he did supposedly hate Ryan Reynolds, so maybe there was some redeeming quality that he had.
Trinity definitely has its problems. It's not a perfect movie, but I would say it's a guilty pleasure movie for me sometimes.
It's got Jessica Biel.
That's true. All right, you want to get into some feedback?
Yeah, let's do some feedback. Let's try to roll through some of this.
Yeah, we definitely have some stuff. I think we're starting back in early May, huh?
If we were going in that order.
We should work backwards here.
If we really want to work backwards, we still have those two big ones from Monty we haven't touched from December.
But I don't think we want to go that far.
I see, that's the slippery slope, Mr. Bokelman. all right. So if you want, where do you want to begin? You wanted to do Monty's Next Generation one then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Starting there and working backwards.
Okay. So I'll read that one. Okay. Hello there, and a happy free comic book day to you. That also tells us how long ago it's been, which isn't that long. First things first, the intro music. I'm going to be honest, I cringed so hard I almost ended up in another reality the first time I heard it, but quickly warmed to it, especially the breakdown at the Chad and Mark bit. But I can't make out the next bit. The Seagull's Pies is my best guess. I'm
Chad and Mark face evil's might, respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Yeah, man. Seagull's Pies. I know he was trying to be amusing. Trying being the key word.
The anyway. Whole thing is, in Brightest Day and Blackest Night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Hoosiers cower before the power. Orange is lust. In blues you can trust. Indigos feel and white ones heal. Yellows scare and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hand's glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mark face evil's might, respect their power, for they'll make you see the light. And that's by a band called the Bad Mama Jammas.
Yeah, you learned something, didn't you, Monty? Whether you wanted to or not. Anyway, the Lantern Cast certainly took on a new style when you guys took over. More professional, I dare say. See, now he's trying to brown nose us. Now I feel guilty about it. Good plan, Monty. Good plan. I dare say. Now, I'm the sort of comic reader that just blasts through, almost always enjoys whatever I read and then totally forgets it until the next. Till the second time, which is why I seriously appreciate your approach. I miss a lot and indeed didn't even know what I was missing until I started listening to Mosaic and you guys, whereupon I realized that there were many more layers to this stuff than I knew. And in order to access these, a critical eye was sometimes needed. For example, I couldn't put into words why I found the start of the new 52 GL comics so bad, which led to a several year break. But having read them again lately, I can see that it was the lack of info on what remained and what had changed, making me feel like I didn't know these people anymore. Like the times we had spent together were so unimportant that they may as well have never existed, not existed. Likewise, with the later New 52 stuff, you taught me that though things were tough, there were still things to like. And I'm looking forward to reading Godhead someday after learning that it's one of the better parts. Surprisingly, yes, that was one of the rare Robert Venditti stories that you could make the case it was well conceived, mostly well executed, and well ended. I thought, and I don't want to go off on this too much, but we always talk about Robert not landing sticking the landing, which is true. But it's also also true that mostly these stories go off the rails much, much earlier than the ending. It's like they were really cool concepts. But because he always had in mind where he wanted to go with it, it becomes pretty clear that it's like when they were having the Green Lantern Corps and the Sinestro Corps working together ever so briefly, just so he could get the fracture. He has an idea where he wants to go with it, but he goes sometimes so quick that you kind of know that this truck is going to be hitting the ditch. So it's not a surprise that the ending most of the time doesn't work. I realized one day that part of why I like the show so much is that I kind of see you guys as the internet age letter call. When I returned to letters, he must even mean the letters column.
Yeah.
When I returned to comics in 04, that time I had a break because the nearest comic shop was 200 miles away. No joke. I was disappointed to find letters pages were gone. They always seriously added to the value of comics to me, as well as simply being more to read. They offered sneak peeks, valuable info on past events, creator insights, and gave this Englishman an honest view of foreign people and their culture. All these things were lost to me, kind of like, I don't know, like tears in the rain or something, until I discovered you guys who basically provide all that and more. That was very nice. And what do you know? Now, not only am I writing regular letters in, but I'm getting them bloody answered as well. Not that I've listened to any of those episodes yet, which I would have been lucky to experience with DC. I'm saying you are more integral to the whole thing simply because DC doesn't seem to care enough anymore. I'll let you talk about any of these before I go on any further.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I have a theory about, and I'm not sure what he's related. Do you know what he's talking about here?
I think there was the next generation that you guys did, like when was it you and John Godwin
and Corwin,
right?
Yeah.
And y'all had an acronym for Chad or something like
that. Oh, okay, maybe. It's been so long. Okay. Yeah. I have a theory about Chad being named after Chad, but then again that would be okay. Once or twice Chad got a little irate over something and was essentially taking in single word sentiments at the creators. You do not that sort of thing. And I just wondered if you thought there was anything to this. So I don't think that's what he's referring to, but I don't, that one's lost on me. So if you want to clarify that, Monty, we'll come back to it. I am on episode 391. Hey, so your colon hasn't exploded yet, Chad. And we're in the thick of it right now. I had a little shiver when Mark mentioned that coronavirus thing happening overseas. I hope you and yours all escaped unscathed. We got Far Sector, yay, and the Green Lantern, Chad's favorite book, being covered. And fair play to you for getting through that. I'm a Morrison fan, but was hoping for a more Batman JLA approach than a full-on Doom Patrol, but crazier thing that we got. I had basically given up by issue 6 or so. Right, gotta go. Thanks for your time. Next, the emotional spectrum.
Yeah, it seems like Monty's having like a similar experience to me with the Lantern cast in terms of like, I was lacking context. I needed more. So I checked in with the podcast I was listening to, which gave me the information I needed to fully accept and understand a little bit more of what I was reading at the time. Because that's how it happened for me. I started with that Rage of the Red Lanterns Final Crisis one shot. And in terms of reading issue by issue regularly, and as things were going, I was like, okay, I need the context for this, through this. And Monty, I guess being the one who was listening to all the episodes from start to finish, finish, quote unquote.
We hope there's a finish.
you probably would know that better than anybody right now, because I'm sure in some of those early episodes you heard, you know, Jim and Mark or Jim and Dan say, things like, hey, we have an email from Chad Bulkelman or whatever, because I was writing in early and going like, hey, I don't understand this or that, or going, hey, can you say this or that? Or I was doing my own independent research and going, hey, from what I've been seeing online and some of the context I'm picking up, a theory would be A, B, C, or D. And then Dan and Jim would either shoot that down or say why there could be some validity to it or whatever. So it seems like Monty was having a similar experience in terms of him stopping or returning to comics around 04. And then, you know, he was talking about how the New 52 was confusing to him in a little bit. And hey, honestly, it was confusing to just even people who were caught up, because they were telling us it was a fresh start or whatever. But with the success of like Snyder's Batman and everything and the Court of Owls and all that stuff, they just couldn't let go of previous continuity. So like, okay, our successes are Geoff Johns's Green Lantern and Scott Snyder's Batman and the Court of Owls stuff. Why would we kick ourselves in the financial pocket there? So they basically restarted everything except those two books, which was more confusing than it should have been. So they kind of shot themselves in the foot there for sure. Because weren't they saying like it was 5 years after Superman's first appearance or Batman or whatever? Like basically the universe had been going already for about 5 years or so.
That might be about right, which is more than a little ironic, because when we go back to Zero Hour, the whole thing that when they did that little timeline that basically almost all the major events in the DCU had only been like 10 years old. You know, like Hal had only been like 10, like Green Lantern for like 10 years. And
whether it was 5 or 10, it doesn't matter, because you have Bruce on the same page with Dick and Tim and Damian and Jason and everything. And it's like he had all those Robins in 10 years. So that was crazy. But yeah, I think the acronym was a Next Gen thing. But yeah. So do you have anything else you want to say about this email?
No. I'm okay. Still puzzled by that part. But either way, let me do Mark's because it's. Yeah. I think the Jessica. This is Mark. He says, I think the Jessica Cruz becoming a Yellow Lantern was a really intriguing storyline that could have went full 12 issues. Her struggles with her perspective of fear versus the way Sinestro uses fear, I think readership for that book would be top 75. I think she can carry a book, like I responded to him. I don't know if I think it could be a top 75 book. I mean, we're seeing enough Lantern books struggle with characters that people know and seemingly should care about struggle to be a consistent top 75 book at the moment. It certainly was a really cool idea, certainly introduced along the way when all the rings went down and everything else. That was something that should have been delved into instead of just swept under the rug, like so many things that get swept under the rug.
But I think if they spun it off as a mini or maxi series, like fully connected to what we were seeing with her as a Yellow Lantern, that would be, connected to the continuity and everything that was happening in the universe at that time, I don't think it would be top 75. That said, if you had an interesting creative team attached to it and it became one of those DC Black Label books that are like magazine format size and it was like a full on horror book or something like that, I could see a Jessica Cruz Yellow Lantern horror book DC Black Label style 3-issue series as being top 75.
And there were other ways to approach it. It could have been an arc. It didn't have to be necessarily a 12 issue. It could have been like a four to six issue arc in one of the main books, depending on what else was going on. There were a bunch of ways they could have handled it, but it was an interesting concept where about the idea that because of her relationship with Fear, her using the ring would not having that ring would not necessarily automatically be so problematic, and it certainly could have a different take on it. But we that got swept completely under the rug.
Yeah, can I reread the S. Davis stuff?
Yes.
So, kind of a back and forth thread from beginning of May to the beginning of June here, but. He started off, he said, on your next show, could you please touch on how you sort your comics? For example, do you sort them by event, like all of them together in Godhead, or do you keep them separately in each individual series? I have them separately, but with so many events, I might change it up and put them all together. I don't know if we ever touched them. Oh, wait, hold on. That's from 2014? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, originally it was 2014.
Wow. Okay. I guess we touched on that a long time ago. Anyways, he said more recently, sorry, I got confused there in this thread. He says, hi, guys. How essential is it to the Green Lantern collection? Is it to read the Dark Stars series from the early 90s? There's 39 issues. Should I buy them? Mark responded that he has won.
which might not be true. I might actually have two, maybe, but I actually think I do only have one issue with the Dark
Stars. Let me check my CLZ app because I'm pretty sure I have more than just one issue because I try to rescue them from 25 cent bins at like half price books or something when I see them because they're all Dark Stars wasn't very popular. I have issue 4, 11, 12, 30, 34, 36, and 37. Those are the issues I own. And when you said that, he said, I'm re-listening to Sean Engel's podcast from the beginning. Miss that guy. Yes, we do miss Sean. Passed away several years ago. He did the Just One of the Guys podcast, which covered Guy Gardner Warrior, some of the Kyle stuff, some of the early Hal stuff from before Kyle, that kind of a thing. Scott had said he bought 36 of the 38 issues of Dark Stars from 1992 to 1996. He says starting to read them now. Evil Star makes an early appearance. Looking forward to this. So to answer your original question, how essential is it? Mark's got one or two issues. I've got seven. I don't know. You know, there's when we get to it, there's many reasons I wanted to cover the Siege of Zeeshram. For GL June, which is currently ongoing, guys. And as of this morning, actually, Dan posted his part three covering the Dark Stars issue of the event. So check out the GL June stuff. We'll talk more about that at the end of the podcast. But it's hard to say because I haven't read it. Mark hasn't read it. So, I there could be some fun stuff in there, but it's only really become relevant because of the John Stewart War Journal stuff right now. And even then, in the issue we just recapped, it's revealing stuff we didn't know before. So how relevant can it really be?
Yeah, it's timely. The topic to discuss as we were leading into it over the last few months was timely. But it's also the other question. It is, regardless of how timely it is now, is it also going to have any long-term ramification? And that's another, and that's something we can't predict at the moment. We can probably hazard a guess, but we really don't know. So if the timing is interesting, as Chad said, the Dark Stars were not particularly popular, and anything to do with the controllers and the Dark Stars just never seems to be overly popular or work. It's one of those things you keep going back to, even though, again, speaking of Robert, he had an interesting take on it, but he only wanted to go down one road and went down it way too fast. That the reality is, yeah, I just, because of its tangential connection to Green Lantern in the history, especially during, you know, the time period of the 90s and things, I guess it's not a bad thing to have. Kind of like having Guy Gardner Warrior, even though obviously we know that has more direct ties as it went on to the Kyle run. But, and even Emerald, and even Emerald Fallout as an epilogue to Emerald Twilight. But
I mean, I will say, I say recently, it's been the past 5 years or so, I did recently finish collecting all the Guy Gardner stuff. So now I have all of Guy Gardner and all of Guy Gardner Warrior. It's the same series, but it changed its name after a little bit. I finally have all the issues. So my next quote unquote project is Dark Stars. So will I be getting them? Yes. I'm not going to pay as much as I did for some of the Guy Gardner stuff. I'm looking specifically in like discount bins and stuff like that for the Dark Star stuff. So I have no rush on that. To answer his question very briefly from 2014, 10 years ago at this point, which I'm sure we answered back then, I put them in series order. So like is it issue 65, whatever, 66 or whatever of Green Lantern that is part of the Zsharam crossover?
I think it's 65.
Yeah. So and that's part two, guys. So I would have my Kyle Rayner run, right? All the way up to issue 65. And in front of issue 65, I would put the first part of the Zsharam crossover, which is the New Titans 124. And then I'd have the Kyle issue. And then I'd have the Dark Stars, then the Damage, then the final issue, which is New Titans 125. And then I'd pick up with Green Lantern 66, 67. So any crossover events on a main series I'm collecting would go in order, technically, of the story that you're talking about there in the long box. The only time it would be difficult for me if I was collecting other series, like for instance, if I was also collecting all of the Dark Star stuff, then I would have a conundrum there. But honestly, in that particular case, it wouldn't really be a conundrum because I guarantee you that issue of Dark Stars is like 25 cents on eBay somewhere. So so I'd have no problem having two copies just to satisfy my old OCD.
That's a good point.
You want me to read the Monty one, since that one, the S one, S Davis was short?
Yeah. That's part of why I wanted to take a second one. So let's do Monty and let's
wrap up there.
Yeah. And Monty will be the last one.
This was towards the end of May. Hello again, Lantern Cast. First, I had to look to see when I started listening to you guys and realize it's been a year and a half, an episode almost every day for all that time. I'm so sorry. I'm currently at EP 402 and very glad to see Chad better from his malady at the time. I also found that Mark's view of COVID was refreshingly grounded. Anyways, on to the topic. I was having a brainstorm on the subject one day and realized that the unifying factor for all nine concepts was that they are all driving forces. By the way, his title for this email is The Emotional Spectrum. So that's where we're going here. He says, where their connection to emotion specifically was always shaky at best, I think of them as, to think of them all as driving forces seems to work a lot better, particularly with my favorite Hope, and Mark's too. In the Blues case, the change of perspective empowers them much more than the initial concept did. I love the creation of the color cores, but was never happy with the Blues being basically useless without a Green and the slow recruitment process. And rightly places Hope Faith as appropriately strong in its own right. What Johns did was clever, and willpower is strengthened by Hope. But the idea of faith in faith itself, something Walker has always had in abundance, has never been explored to the fullest because of those initial limitations. Another brainstorm led me to the realization that a religion based on trust, faith, and hope in ourselves and our own future rather than a deity might be something I can believe in. It was always clear that death and life were never emotions, but as driving forces, their influence is undeniable. Fear, rage, and love are the only true emotions of the nine, and love is one I personally have a hard time defining, but by gum, they all surely make people do stuff. Compassion and avarice tend to be the result of other emotions than emotions themselves, but both are known to take people down paths they might not have taken otherwise. Most significantly, greens are placed in the center because willpower is the driving force. Last time I say driving force, promise. Yeah, sure. Anyways, them's me thoughts, though I will add that John's interpretation of love always grossed me out a bit. And now, quick current comic content comics. Sorry. GL, love how it's all coming together. Appreciate the slow burn at the start even more. Is it all leading to an Earth-based core like in the late 80s, aliens and all? I hope so. War Journal, this week's issue is still on the way. Way more interested in John's mom and freaky construct sister than I am in John's own journey, which seems to be going nowhere very slowly. Alan Scott, waiting for the trade. Also not going to bother with the tangent mini coming up. Again, I'll get the trade down the line, but I did decide to get Absolute Power on the strength of the Free Comic Book Day special. I personally haven't read that yet, by the way. That's me, Chad. Also, that Mark Waid might be my favorite writer overall. Ironic that he's basically never written any GL. Worth noting, I'm reading Cy Spurrier's and Flash, and the last few issues I realized is a lot like Morrison's GL run, but it actually does a much better job of reining in all the Silver Age style wackiness. Right, that's all for now. Next time, the best Green Lantern series. We're waiting with bated breath, man. We
and then we have to, because we still have to backtrack and do his other ones. But the Monty episode. When I first read this email, my natural response was, and why would you think my response to COVID wouldn't be grounded? I'm a pretty objective and rational person. Why would my I don't remember what I said then, though I can suspect. But the point is, but all kidding aside, see, of course, obviously this was talking about the Blues is also based on the way it was originally introduced. Now we kind of know that technically speaking, the Blues can get powered off for anybody, just like they can power up anybody. And I think they can get amped. They can be functional with another core, with the other cores, too. But that's kind of something they developed over time. Something that everybody seemingly forgot, like a lot of the other interesting things that were explored in the Cullen Bunn run.
Yeah, they kind of went hawk and dove with it in the way that Dove, like, was supposedly never supposed to have like offensive capabilities or anything like that, but he was always able to do deep. Do you remember that Hawk and Dove episode from Justice League Unlimited?
No. Did you ever watch Justice League Unlimited? I did, but I not religiously enough where I would. Especially if that was the main point or the main characters in that episode, because they would not draw me in.
Yeah, I always thought that was interesting. So, yeah, Dove being, you know, like the avatar of order, and Hawk being the avatar of chaos or whatever, some iterations or whatever, the interpretation of the order and the peace and everything was always like, you know, he's not going to fight or whatever. But then they adapted it to like he could defend himself and so on and so forth. So it seems like there was an evolution to the Blue Lanterns in the same way Dove from Hawk and Dove had an evolution in their abilities.
It's still, again, a common sub theme tonight is Robert Venditti. It's like one of those things that really bugs me about how that Sinestro book was so damn good. The Cullen Bunn book was so good. And there were so many cool concepts in that book, and they were left in such an interesting place. And then again, the idea of it's not just sticking the landing. It's like Robert Venditti just took a bulldozer to every single thing Cullen Bunn did just right at the beginning of that series. And it just kind of like it got the book off to a bad start. So I remember that's one of the reasons why I remember the fact that, oh, hey, you know, you remember St. You know, they may have tortured him to get there, but hey, you know, St. Walker can power up yellows among them but nonetheless, as a driving force, I think there's truth in that. Just like there's probably some truth in that compassion and avarice are not, they may be emotions, but they more be as a response to other emotions. I haven't really delved into how much I would need some more time to think about this to really know how much I buy in. I think there's truth in it. I just don't know how much truth I buy into it. But I get it, because usually there has to be a trigger. I mean, you could be naturally greedy, but usually jealousy might be a trigger to lead you to greed and things like that. I think we both agree on War Journal. John's story is the least interesting thing in that book right now, much like Future State. The Green Lantern book is, again, I think it's gone a little down. It was a little shakier based on where he was when he wrote this, but it's still good. The Alan Scott, if you really need to read it, yeah, the trade would be the best way to read it. I don't know how relevant it really is, honestly. Like it depends, I guess. I guess it depends either how much of an Alan Scott fan you are, which can work for or against that book, or if you're just really invested in the character and want to keep reading Alan Scott stories and you're afraid you might be lost. I don't know if any of that's really true either, but that's a possibility. And I know we are going to read the Tangent, whatever. It's not really the Tangent, but the pseudo Tangent GL, the one that looks like the Tangent GL.
It mini. Looks exactly like her. Come on. Like, I don't understand. Like, I get that, like, it's a different, it could be a different Elseworlds, but you're dressing her almost exactly the same and you're making it like a horror themed book. Come on.
Yeah, it is certainly it's an odd choice. It's certainly an odd choice if you don't want people to make the connection. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. I don't have much to say here. I think it's interesting what he's talking about in terms of driving forces. Everybody's tried to either fight against or try and rationalize or explain better or, you know, add their own little logic circles or whatever to the idea of the emotional spectrum. But a lot of that spun out of some people who are just so anti-GL or sorry, anti-Jeff Johns. There were a lot of people that were just so, they hate the emotional spectrum idea so much. But maybe liked GL more than they hated the emotional spectrum idea, or so we're just trying to logic themselves out of whatever Jeff was putting on the page, in order to cope, I guess. I was honestly fine with it. Like, I think it's, you know, ooh, duh, pretty rainbow colors, you know, that whole Roy G. Biv thing. And people making fun of that, I get, like, it's low-hanging fruit to make fun of it, but it's also so simple. Like, and often the simple ideas are the best ones. Now, does that mean they don't have plot holes or anything? No, absolutely. They're just as susceptible to that as any other storytelling trope. But the idea that, you know, they were correlating emotions and that they affected each other the way they did at the time in terms of, like, you know, Hope was taking away the sting of Atrocitus's rage momentarily, because he was consumed by rage. And that moment of being in St. Walker's presence and his light and the proximity to a feeling Hope was abating said rage, and how Hope was nothing without the will to enact it. Like, you know, obviously Monty makes a point here and it's well founded, but like, that's also just simple enough to make sense. So like, I don't, you know, think anybody should not explore that further and dive deep. But honestly, it made enough sense and was simple enough and elegant enough that I'm totally fine with it as is.
And it's all, and as we know, it's, you know, like you mentioned, it's constantly changing anyway. So we know Jeremy's going to have some take on the emotional spectrum because he kind of told us that. And they're leading towards something, or there's going to be something related to the emotional spectrum, which makes what's going on now either plausible or there's an explanation for it. And I guess to his credit, we really have no idea what that means at the moment, whether it's going to work or not is another story, but I'm hoping, no pun intended, that at least it's going to be interesting enough where it makes us think, because of the fact that we know the emotional spectrum's kind of been almost like a dirty word to a certain extent lately, in a way that's kind of been pushed aside. Whether, and like you said, some of that could have been just anti-Jeff Johns, that there's a lot of people that want to kind of like do revisionist history and make it sound like, you know, Jeff Johns just was like, it was the worst thing for Green Lantern. It's like, yeah. It's like, and don't get me wrong, it doesn't mean there's things that you can't criticize him for and things that you don't like or things that didn't necessarily work for you. It's he doesn't walk on water. But the point is, as we always talk about, it seems when we do the State of the Green Lantern Union about whether we're ever going to be like, whether Green Lantern's ever going to be that popular again, it's like, well, it's kind of happened one time. and it has never come close to happening again. So until it does, you can't even say it's cyclical. So far, it's happened once, and it happened with Jeff John. So that was something.
All right. Do you have anything else you want to touch on before we close out?
I don't think so.
All right. GL June currently in full swing. First part is already out. New Titans, number 124 over on the Multiverse Musings podcast network, where Donnie and Adam on Emerald Echo covered that. Then Podcast of OA / Blog of OA with Myron and Phil covering the Green Lantern issue. And as of today, as we record this, Dan released his coverage of the Dark Stars issue, which is part 3 over on his channel, Mosaic Comics. Next part will be covered by Will over at the Green Lanterns podcast, and you can find it on YouTube as well as Spotify, I believe. And then towards the end of June, or the very last day of June, at some point in at the end of June, will be our coverage of the final issue of the crossover. So make sure you check out all those spots for the various parts of the coverage there.
Yes, going strong. Hopefully it'll end strong. No pressure on you, Chad.
All right, guys. Mark, if people want to reach out to us, how do they do so?
Lanterncast@gmail.com. Lanterncast.com is the website. You can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, hashtag GLcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, whichever platform or platforms you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.